awkward, cringeworthy tales. And now, your host, Weekly Humorist Editor-in-Chief, Marty Dundix.
Hi, and welcome to Talkward. I'm Marty Dundix, Editor-in-Chief of Weekly Humorist Magazine, and this is Talkward, a fun little podcast where professional and funny people come to tell awkward and cringeworthy stories. And I'm super excited about today's guest because this is her third time on the show. And in every time she's on, it's wonderful and exciting, and it's always full of interesting stories and energy. Lots of energy always with this wonderful comedian, Brittany Bray. Welcome to the show, Brittany. Awkward. Wonderful to have you.
Thank you. Wonderful to be here. Third time's the charm.
Third time's the charm.
Here we are. That's that. I was in a middle school pop group, and that was our name. We were called Third Time's the Charm.
Is that real?
Yeah, that might be my story now. Maybe I don't know. Yeah, no. But I was. Yeah.
Third time's the charm. Middle school pop group for you. What was the main pop stars when you were in middle school? Was that NSYNC time?
Yes, NSYNC, Beyonce, Destiny's Child. There was this group called Dream that was really big. BB Mac.
BB Mac.
yeah, that was it. Yeah, Christina Aguilera, Jessica Simpson.
So that was like that. That was like 97, 98, 99.
Yeah, early millennium, late 1990s.
I was working as a DJ at a hit music station in Syracuse, New York at Z89 Radio, and that was a major rotation was all of those pop songs was right when I got there. It was like Barbie Girl, Aqua, and
yes!
then it was like NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees, all of that stuff. Like there was such a major wave of similar pop engines. Like the record label started like manufacturing pop songs. Pop groups, you know, like
and Backstreet and O-Town and all of them, and I'm sure like Third Time's a Charm, or as we called ourselves 3TC, we probably submitted our tape to you in your radio station, and you were like, we were like 3TC, because there was also 3LW was one of the groups at the time, Three Little Women, and we were Third Time's a Charm, so we really thought we were gonna make it.
3TC kind of sounds like it might be a serial killer nickname.
Fun.
The 3TC killer strikes again. He's got a disgusting MO and
is he single? That's what I want to know. Is he single?
It's always baby doll heads. Is he single? Probably. And if he's in prison, he probably has tons of admirers.
I can do long distance. That's all I'm trying to say.
Brittany Bray, you are a comedy producer, a comedian. You are a small business type entrepreneurial person. You are currently in Miami, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You were in New York, but you kind of split your time between New York and Miami now because you still do shows in New York. And you organize shows that are in New York, but now they're virtual shows. But they weren't virtual shows. So let's talk a little bit. Last time I talked to you was probably about a year ago. And you were running shows at, it was called Rock Candy. And it was a great, was that a monthly show?
Monthly at Rockwood Music Hall. Yes.
Rock Candy. You had great marketing. Great. I loved all the PR stuff you did. I thought you had great branding for that show. And you always had a great headliner. And it was a cool looking room. You got big names.
Yep.
And then everything stops. And all of us who have monthly shows realize that not doing a monthly show gives you a little bit of time to breathe.
Right.
But then how quickly did you go from not having a monthly show in person to finding another way to do comedy not inside traditional means, places, things like that?
I think it was 12 hours. When you're sick in the head, like us comedians are, it's literally like a drug. And I think I was in like denial over what was going on with this pandemic. And I mean, I was still like, well, are my shows still happening? Because I feel like everyone accepted the reality of this pandemic at a different moment in March 2020, right? Like by the end of March, everyone was like, okay, well, we're locked down and everything's shut down and we're in it and this is real. But I remember those like 2 weeks leading up to it, some people immediately were canceling stuff and going home. Other people like myself were in like complete denial and like, still going to shows and like, is this serious? Like, what's this corona thing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like everybody. And then the second everything was actually canceled and actually closed and Daddy Cuomo was like, no comedy, it's illegal. I call him Daddy Cuomo. then that's, I think like that first week I remember being trapped in my apartment and having like a real, like an outpouring of support from like other like media outlets and people, friends being like, I don't even think it hit us comedians. And my friends were like, what are you going to do for money? And then I was like, oh yeah. You know, like
and then enters everybody's new OnlyFans account.
Exactly. And then I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do with all these elbow pics and feet pics. Feet pics are oversaturated. So I started to rely on the elbow, you know, the side nostril really
good.
Sure,
sure. There's a niche for that. There's definitely some earlobe. People are into earlobes.
Let me tell you something about internet porn. And I don't know a lot about it. I think I have a pretty basic knowledge, comprehensive knowledge. If you think there's a market for it, there's a market for it. Just when you think there's a market for just about anything, I think. I think it was that first, like second or third week of March, once everything was actually closed. And what was the first thing we were doing? Instagram Live was the first thing everybody hopped
Instagram
on.
Live was everywhere. Yeah. Instagram Live was almost like you would... I watched some, but a lot of them it was accidentally going into because you were trying to look at someone's story and then you'd accidentally hit someone's Instagram Live and you entered
the
into
worst.
A show and you want to get out as quickly as possible. But if you were like one of four people in the show, you had to stay.
Oh, you have manners.
Because
I would.
They would see me and it would be like, oh, Marty just joined. Hey, Marty, how you doing? I'm like, I'm
the
doing
time
great.
They finished
I'm
saying,
so excited
great.
About this show that I just joined. I'm going to sit here and I would, and honest to God, I did this. I would leave because I didn't want to watch it, but I didn't want to leave. So I would just leave it on my phone and I'd put my phone down on the couch and I'd go back to watching TV and it would just be on because I
on
felt
mute.
Like I was attending and I was being supportive. And then I'd be like, and I'd check to see how many people, I'm like, okay, enough people are watching now that I'm not
I can bow out.
Leaving.
I could bow out. Yeah, that's so funny. That's funny. You're much more polite than I am. I would, by the time they would finish the sentence, Brittany Brave just joined. Brittany Brave was gone. Let me put it that way. I was out. Okay, Irish exited right out of that shit. And that was always interesting too, Instagram Live, because first off, it's a very static platform that's terrible for stand-up. So we were all trying to make that work and whatever. But like when you're bombing in real time, and I could talk about this now because I bombed so badly last night that it's very fresh. I'm still licking my wounds. You're spending the entire time like guessing, am I bombing?
Yeah.
Or like, they look engaged. How bad is this going? And I'm trying to, and then on Instagram Live, you watch the numerical count go down in real time. It just drops as you're losing people's attention. So, you know,
it's like a stock market crash in real time. It's like an audience crash. It's just like, literally. Oh, the number keeps, is this number in the negatives? How is there negative people in the show?
Yeah, like whenever you watch movies and like stock market executives are like, ah, and running around because like stock is dropping. That was us. We were like sweating and we're like, tell your best joke. Tell your, take your shirt off. Show an elbow. Ah, like, you know, like, ooh. So,
yeah.
But it made me tougher. It made me stronger, you know.
I think so. I think so many people are, and you've noticed it with the late night talk shows and in places that used to rely on having an audience to have a reaction immediately, like Colbert or anybody that did the late night show at home, they've changed their monologues, but some people have been able to become better at, the jokes are stronger because they're not relying on that audience energy. So they know they're not going to get that reaction that's going to make them feel good. So they need to write jokes that are funny without having an audience to tell you that they're funny. You have to be so confident in this joke that the delivery is a delivery and then just silence and then moving on, you know?
Yeah.
And if you can do that, you've just become a much stronger performer and comic. And I think when people start going back to having an audience to give them that love in person, a lot of comics are going to have improved greatly because of this exercise. Not all, but some will have become like much better because they've been working out their joke crafting without getting that audience, because a lot of times audience will laugh when something isn't even funny, you know, because they want to support you. And they probably, without having any support, even if it's like fake laughs, they've had to toughen up a lot to be out there and like still trudging. You know, a lot of people hung it up temporarily until they can get a real audience. And the people that are out there making the shows, I've seen a ton new. There's a lot more new names I'm seeing because mm-hmm. it's people that maybe you didn't see as much at the bar shows or the club booked shows because mm-hmm. maybe they didn't make it on, and now they are working it like nonstop.
Yeah. Yes, that is definitely a thing. So the virtual comedy, it was kind of, I'm a big fan of it for that reason. Like how you said, I personally felt like as if I've grown immensely as a comic from it. Just because, there's obviously nothing compares to like a live living, breathing room inside too with a live audience. But yeah, sometimes you allow yourself, it is feeding off of their energy, and it's a lot easier to get in your head in front of a live audience. If something you expected to land one way and it doesn't, or what does that person's look on their face mean? Do I have them? Do I not? Who's in the room? Blah, blah, blah. And all of these different bullshit factors.
Is Jeffrey Toobin in here? What is he doing?
What? Why is he here? Yeah, exactly. Jeff Bezos. It's so all these different things. And I think Zoom comedy, it became like a workout. It helps with your pacing a lot, with your pacing, just to help you slow down and like recraft your delivery. And yeah, a little bit of like the lack of fuckery, if you will. Like you're just kind of like, well, I know I might not get the response. So it really is just about the material and me working something out. And I will say like, I think this pandemic has leveled the playing field. Like I've seen some people have fallen off the face of the planet. And I guess if you found out that like comedy really wasn't what you wanted to do, more power to you. I think everybody reinvented themselves to some extent in this quarantine. But then I do think I have seen some select people that I think we all were grinding really hard and working really hard beforehand and doing well. And then, if we were able to push through virtual and push through outdoor shows, now we are a little bit like, hey, man, I'm coasting in a whole new way. I wasn't this time last year, and I'm a way better comic because I like didn't let that time just go to waste.
Yeah.
I just wrote and suffered through Zoom shows and got out of my own way and got out of my, and if I can tell a joke on a Zoom call or tell a joke in Central Park where a dog comes by and a fucking subway train runs by and I can still command a crowd, it almost makes indoor comedy now not look like a cakewalk, but you're like, oh God, we had so many elements with indoor comedy that set comedy up to succeed.
You didn't know how good you had it. Now when you get back to it, you're going to be like, God, this is amazing.
I bombed in a bar show. I bombed in Boca Raton so badly last night. And I have knock on wood. I fucking fuck you, Boca Raton. Okay, I went there and I said, if all else fails, I'll have a decent set and I will find me a sugar daddy to go home with.
Yeah.
Or I will just live in a retirement home. I don't know. And I hadn't had a bomb like that in a while because I have been getting up a lot and I have been doing, and I just had it rock me. And I was like, in a weird way, I was like, don't complain, Brittany. Like, ooh, you got to bomb in a bar in Boca Raton. Like, yes.
What was the room like? Was it a big room? Did it have a nice stage?
It was. It was actually, it was great. It had a great stage. It was the brand new comedy night at this Irish pub in Boca. And it was the first night I took the bullet spot. And I was feeling a bomb, you know, as comics. It's just, I was like already kind of walking into that night, like, nah, I'm PMSing. I'm not in the mood to be funny.
Is the bullet spot the first spot after the host?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I didn't consider that. Like, I was like, whatever, at this point, I'll take the bullet, the guests, like, whatever. And then I had two or three older comics say, like, you did well. I was like, really? And they were like, and only comics get this because comics were like, you were given a thankless spot.
Yeah.
And I really didn't give myself that slack.
Well,
but
it also depends on the host, right? So if the host doesn't set it up for you and doesn't warm them up enough, then, you know, then basically you're warming them up.
Right. You're always doing a little bit of spillover from the host, especially. And then sometimes if the host only does crowd work too, it's all a whole thing. Because then it's like they only do crowd work and then the audience gets used to that being what it is you're going to do. Because there was a lot of crowd work up top. And then that was all that really worked for me last night. I think that's what they wanted, was like more of that. Then when I tried to dip into material, they were like, wait a minute. No, we thought this was going to be, you know, but they keep you humble, the bombs. I feel
that's
like
good.
You've known me from my very, very beginnings in stand-up to now. Was so beginning. Very new.
Really?
You Yeah.
I booked you on guaranteed delivery. How
early?
Was that really early?
When was that? 2018, maybe?
Yeah, that was, yeah, definitely.
I didn't really start seriously doing stand-up, actually doing stand-up. Like, I don't count
you
the
were
first
on a show that was horribly booked. I booked the poorest lineup, not including you, but I booked a show that I think someone dropped out, and because that person was more of a name, I had kind of put all my eggs in that name's basket, and then everything else was kind of like, well, whatever. And Wendy Starling was hosting it, and someone bailed, and I called Micah Fox to fill in. And Micah and Wendy were looking at the lineup, and they were like, you don't really have a show. And this is like, this is at the show. This is like 10 minutes before the show.
Yeah, they're like, you don't have a lineup.
You guys will figure it out. You guys will make it funny. Go. And they did. They did. Yeah. You were one of the real comics on the bill. Everyone else was kind of like a friend that asked me to be on the show, and I was like, sure, you can be on the show. And I put too many friends who asked me to be on the show on the same show.
So you were running like an open mic, really?
It was probably worse than an open mic. It was
because it didn't have enough.
It was like an open mic that only had like four people.
That's pretty bad. When
I ended up letting this guy who was the door guy at some comedy club, and he wanted to do 5 minutes, we let him on stage, and then he like knocked the lamp over that was on the
I do remember that.
Remember that? I was like, what is going on? It's so funny because after you start after the show starts and you're the producer, your part is pretty much done. Like, I'm running time and I'm giving the light, but I mean, it's the show is off and running. Like, I've pushed the boulder down the hill and we'll see where it goes. And at that point, I was like, I was just watching it, and it was someone else's show. I was like, what is this show?
Yeah, you're like, is this, did I make this happen? Is this my doing? What happened?
It was fun, though. They were all fun. And looking back on any of them, you miss it so much. And you're like, God, I had such an opportunity to do this wonderful show in this wonderful room. And I enjoyed every show, and now I'm not getting to do them, and I miss it so much. So hopefully that'll come back. That location.
Your show
is
one of my favorites, and thank you you've had me on it a couple times, and it's a great venue.
So much fun. Let's talk about the show that you're. You picked up a great thing, and I had never heard of the Tiny Cupboard, and you started doing rooftop shows there, like really quick when outdoor comedy started up. And what is this location, and how did you find the Tiny Cupboard? I know that you were running shows there. I know that Natalie Cuomo was running shows there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, how did you guys find this place? How did they start saying, oh, this is a rooftop we have. Just let's start putting people on the roof. Like, had they had shows up there, like music shows before?
They had not. And I was one of the first, if not the first, rooftop show up there. So I am very, I latched onto the right two people, the right venue. I had not heard of the Tiny Cupboard pre-pandemic, but they did exist. They were the smallest venue in the world. They have a really cool neon purple teeny tiny box in Bushwick. It's a really cool space. And like, they would have music and comedy, and different things there. And then they were one of the first to have such a presence in the virtual area that's how I found out about them. I did improvised tarot with them. I started my own weekly thing. They started putting me on like whatever, going back and forth. And then, the city started to open up. People were starting to do things on the roof or in their backyards or parks or whatever. And I was talking to Matt Rosenblum and Amy Wong from The Cupboard, the two founders. And, it was like, should we do something outside? And Matt's like, we have a roof. So it's really, really cool. We had JT Anderson shoot the first couple of shows. And it's really cool to look back at those early July when the energy was just raw. Everybody was pandemic bombing.
Yeah.
but having so much fun. Like so much fun. Just so happy to see each other and be able to do it again.
Yeah.
And it was literally like humble beginnings. Like, their bar was like a leftover bottle of red wine and a couple White Claws, and like it was a mic and a PA and 20 chairs, and it was, I think it was free. Like, we just put anybody, whoever was there, we just like, God, people just listened to us, and we were all so happy to see each other. I put anybody up, people who showed up, I was like, go, like, who care? And like, also the audience was like horny for outdoor activity outside of their house.
Yeah, just leaving is a thrill. Like, it's hard to bomb when people are so starved for any kind of entertainment that their bar for being entertained is now just leaving the house.
It's just leaving the house. Yeah. And a little bit of it too is like, I mean, I do feel like there was some part of, we all had to like, even you don't lose your funny in the pandemic, but you do, it's like a muscle like anything else. Like if you have a natural knack for playing soccer, that's never going to go away. But if you don't play it for 5 years, it's going to be a little rusty when you jump back in. So I think that's what was going on with all of us. But I think also we too had to like retrain the audiences as well. Like there was like a timid but positive energy I remember on that first rooftop show, because everyone was like this, we're out of the house, mask wearing, distancing, all that kind of stuff. And I think we kind of helped the audiences remember how to be comedy audience members. But yes, to your point, like once outdoor comedy took off, these audiences were rabid. They were amazing. Like they were sitting through like torrential rain, freezing cold temperatures, yeah. Parks, roofs, and laughing their ass off. Like, and you were like, this is awesome. Like this is, we've never seen an appreciation for comedy like this ever. So,
and it
yeah.
has this amazing skyline. Like I'm looking at it yeah. on the screen right now. I'm pulling up some photos for the folks that can watch this podcast.
Gorgeous.
On video. It will be on video, but if you're listening on the audio version, we can, I'll put up some of these photos on the website. But I mean, here's a great photo of Mark Norman doing a set on the roof, and the roof has this, it's got some, you know, great graffiti along the sides, and you just have
it's so Bushwick, so Brooklyn.
So yeah. Brooklyn, and this great, yeah. I mean, this great skyline, just all of, and everyone's nice and distanced. Everyone's, you know, it's very far apart. So people, I mean, people took, you know, safety very seriously with a lot of these, with these outdoor shows. And I know that Stand Up New York took it very seriously with all the park shows that
yes.
people had to do. And now they're doing, you know, now they're subway doing so shows. Many shows on the subway.
Yeah.
The subway shows look very interesting. I'm not sure if I got trapped on the subway, I'd love. Maybe it would depend on who the talent was.
Yeah, you got to have the right subway car. I hadn't done any of the subway. I did a subway open mic, and that was enough to
oh,
make
Oh, really?
Me... I did a subway open mic. But that used to exist pre-pandemic, too. There was one that would happen at the Herald Square subway station, and it's kind of funny. Like it's very like masturbatory for the comics because
yeah.
it's so bad that we all just get a kick out of it. And like, does it make you a better comedian? I don't know. Is it funny? Yeah. Like, you know, but I've heard great things about those subway shows with Stand Up New York. I've had a couple people do them and they're like, they're actually kind of fun. Like, and it is that willing, like train wreck that you just subscribe to. And you're just like, this is weird, isn't it? And the subway's like, yeah, the subway car to people. So,
but it's not any weirder than the other entertainment that you get on the subway. Like, you know,
yeah.
you get the kids who are, you know, having the big show, and then, you know, they're doing the flips around the bars and they're doing all this stuff that's terrifying.
Or this one guy that's just jerking off behind a copy of the New York Times.
Exactly.
But,
so there's, you know, there's a wide range of entertainment on the subway. So
something for everyone.
Comparatively speaking.
Yeah.
So the show that's coming up on Friday. So moving forward. So you had the live show on the roof at the Tiny Cupboard for a couple of months. Weeks? You
July.
Did the Friday night show for
first
July.
First week in July, yep. Mm-hmm.
And now you have a Friday show that's, is it always the virtual show on Fridays?
Yes, so it's just seen many different iterations. It went from the roof to their indoor church that they built, their comedy church. And then from there, yes, now that everything's shut back down, it's now on Zoom. Same time, every Friday, 8:30.
So this is called the Friday show. I have the poster for this Friday show up on the screen, and it's the Friday special virtual room and fundraiser presented by Brittany Bray, Fridays, 8:30 on Zoom. And
yes.
this is supporting Abortion Access Front. So this is a fundraising show.
Yes, it is. And Liz is going to join us. The fantastic Liz Winstead she's popping in tomorrow night too. So that's going to be great.
That's exciting. And who,
yeah.
Who do you have? So these are virtual, and tell me about virtual shows and the Zoom shows and how those have been going, and the laughter and the technical side of Zoom. What have you learned from doing Zoom shows technically, and how have they improved since you guys started doing Zoom on stand-up?
Zoom?
Stand-up on Zoom.
Yeah. I love virtual comedy. I will say that. I am sorry. That's my parents' landline going off because I'm at home. I should answer it.
Sorry, this is 1942 calling.
And 1942 calling. We want some of your rights back. And so I love virtual comedy. It's been a lot of fun. I've been used to it. I've done it on StreamYard. I've done it on Zoom. I've done it on a lot of different stuff. Zoom, I will say this. no shade to Zoom if the Zoom gods are listening, but I think it's one of those things that we all are embracing because it's out of convenience. It's had its awkward moments trying to navigate. And I feel like I think back to like the first few shows that we did and not knowing you could God mute people or spotlight cameras or different views or breakout rooms or whatever. We all were just like, is this thing on? Like screaming into our iPads and laptops. And now, yeah, it's like, now it's just constantly, now it can be great if you know how to finesse it, but it's kind of no different than any kind of hosting or producing a comedy show.
The like, only I still thing do- that I worry about and that I'm trying to figure out, and someone, I think you, I was talking to somebody earlier who had gone to a bunch of Zoom shows, and I think one was with Mike Birbiglia, and something that I find missing is that twitter of laughter, you know, just that little, almost like the canned laughter in a sitcom that you get that makes you feel like that was
little
the end of the joke.
Track. A little,
I want Zoom to let me not necessarily have a laugh track, but kind of. Like you could actually push a couple of good buttons that's like big laugh, small laugh. But then maybe all of the people in the Zoom, if you can push a button to make everybody who's not a performer make their microphone at like 2.
Right? Oh, yeah. Like so an audio mixing board.
Yeah, so the audio is like background noise, but it's like, but it's like background noise that when together would feel like a wave of laughter instead of having it be the same volume. And then it's like one guy's like, and you're like, oh, Jesus, shut
or
up,
one,
mute that guy.
Or this one woman who from Wisconsin, I think her name was Rita, she decided to garden. She was like potting plants during a Zoom comedy show, and it was right by like her speaker, and you were just hearing clanking and clanking of her like little shovel and stuff. And I was like, Rita, go on mute. Like, just do one thing at a time, Rita. Don't multitask. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because it is all equal. And then they do have that issue of like the camera pans to the person who's technically the loudest, who often isn't the comedian. It's usually Rita and her fucking succulents. Okay. So yeah. Yes. Zoom, get on it.
Yeah. So succulent. Are you on the TikTok? You're not a TikTok person? Because it's like, it's interesting. I've seen a lot of, because, you know, I'm a isolated person these days. So my entire world is social media and my phone and Instagram and whatever.
Which it was for everybody before the pandemic, but now we just have an excuse. Now we're like,
exactly.
This is my life.
Exactly.
Right.
And people that have, definitely started OnlyFans, which is like interesting. And then definitely started TikToks. Like people have become TikTok celebrities. And I'm not on TikTok, but the amount of viewership that people seem to get on TikTok is insane. Like
it is, but I don't think it translates. I don't really like TikTok. Sorry, China.
I made a mistake when I was like, I'm gonna get Weekly Humorist on TikTok. I'm just gonna set this up. And it was like right before everything shut down. I was deciding I was going to go on TikTok and I was going to have a brand, a Weekly Humorous brand on TikTok. So I opened up the TikTok and I'm like, I want the, you know, Weekly Humorous username. I'm like, yeah, it's available. So I secured that and it's setting up account. It's like setting up account, birthday. And I just put like the start of the business.
Yeah.
Which would be three years. So it's like, oh, since you're 3 years old, you can only have limited access to TikTok. Thank you. And it like shut my account down. So now I can only look at like animal videos. And it won't let me change it. So I have this, I secured the username. I can't use the account at all.
That is hilarious. That is hilarious. They should do that with OnlyFans too. They should be like, since you're only 17 years old or 18, I don't know. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, that's really funny.
So I can only look at, it's like baby animals and babies. And
which is honestly, arguably, you're in the best 1% of TikTok.
Yeah.
I really think you have to be mentally deranged to be good at it. Like anybody who's like, and like, if you're a comedian and you have some success on there, congratulations. Also, it doesn't matter. Sorry, shots fired. But like, it never translates to anything. Yeah. The people using it, you have to see like even the views. Like I've had little things now, like pop, like random stand-up clips or stupid videos. But like, it never, ever, ever translates to people following me anywhere else or ever being ticket buyers.
Yeah.
And then it just results in me fighting with some 16-year-old in Arkansas who's like, you're not funny. And I'm like, you can't even hold a job. And like, you know, like it's just, it's not good.
I think the only upside for being popular on a platform is that maybe other places will report how popular you are on, like BuzzFeed will say like, this was this hilarious thing on TikTok. And then that's something. but that's pretty right. much all you're going to get.
Yes, that's what I think. Yeah. So I have not, I do not, I TikTok out of necessity, and I just keep, I just am throwing anything on there.
What's coming up next? What's the next moves for Brittany Brave in the comedy business producer world?
I have a web series coming out that I'm so excited about.
That's right. I was looking at that. I wanted to talk about that because I keep on seeing stills. You keep posting stills from this like film, and it looks like a comedy. It looks like maybe like a rom-com type thing. A
little bit, yeah. It's called The Disastrous Dating Life of Diane Damone, and it is a web series. It's very high-maintenance, Fleabag-esque, and it's great. It's episodic. One story, one guy at a time, and it's a very awkward, quirky, but real.
So each episode is a different guy.
Different guy. Okay. He's introduced. We see it's based on real life too. It's based on things that I've gone through, and also things that the director and creator Joe Conroy, his friend Lori, they're very good friends, and she, much like me, we bonded on this. She went through ridiculous, crazy, you'd never believe this to be true shit, and trying to date in New York City, in Dayton, Philly, where she lives now. And Joe was like, I want to make a show about this. So it basically, it's based off of her craziest stories. Mm-hmm. There's an element of surrealism to it. That's where I think the show has like its charm. But yeah, each of these guys is one story, one guy, one episode, and then he's gone. But like the peripheral characters that are Diane's inner voice, this is the surreal aspect, inner voice, her voice of reason, things like that. Those people are recurring throughout the show. So that's kind of cool.
That's awesome. How long is each episode?
It's under 10 minutes each episode. And we have 3 spec episodes shot, a bunch more written, currently writing a bunch more. But like our goal now, we're premiering episode 1 with a live virtual comedy show on February 18th at 9 p.m. It's free. Just need an RSVP.
Where can people go for that? Your website?
My website and Eventbrite. And my Instagram has all my links and all the
at
things.
At Brittany Brave.
Yes. And at Disastrous Diane Series is the show. Yeah. So we're going to do a virtual stand-up show, a cast Q&A, and we're going to screen episode 1. And then we're going to let episode 1 breathe and see what it does. We have 2 already made. And then I'm probably flying back to New York in March and April to make another 3. And yeah, we all really love this show and believe in it a lot. And I got to write in it, help cast it, help produce it, help
scout
location.
It looks great. The stills that I've seen, it looks real high quality. Like it looks like a, like I thought it was a movie. Like
it's awesome.
It looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's wonderful. Joe Conroy and Americana Media is who's producing and who created it. And I'm very fortunate. We worked together like a year and a half ago on an entirely other web series. And then he approached me last summer. And he's like, I've been writing this web series. It's about like a feisty Italian girl who's both feet in and both feet out trying to find love and connection in New York. And he's like, I can't help but hear you in all of the scripts. And
so
I was
that
like,
can be,
hell yeah.
And since some of this is coming from an autobiographical place, this can be your cringeworthy talkward story can be maybe one of the things.
Yes. Oh, yeah, sure.
So what? Well, tell me a story that maybe made it into the web series.
Which is the one that made, so we are writing an episode based off of a fella that I was seeing about a year and a half or 2 years ago who, is asexual, a little asexual. And it just basically is going to follow Diane around, being perpetually sexually rejected by someone she's also somehow only in a sexual relationship with. And this guy literally, it was very strange. And we started off as friends. And then it opened up that part of our relationship and it was great. And it was healthy, fun, whatever. And then he started to reveal that he'd rather like he would tell me he wanted me to come over so that we could paint or like make cartoons and animations. And I thought that was code for like anal, or like I was like, oh, we're making cartoon, like, oh, we're gonna try something new tonight. And then I would get there and he'd be like,
Bugs Bunny you.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. It's really like bend over 101 Dalmatians, no, or whatever. And then I get there and he'd be like sipping tea and I would be all dressed up and like a cocktail or two in. I'm like, we're gonna and then he was like, I'm not in the mood, I'd rather read a book. And there was like one moment when he was like, I started writing jokes and I was in his bed and I was like, okay, what are you? And he goes, well, you want to hear them? I said, yeah. He's like, so you know how sex makes me really uncomfortable? And I was like, Yeah, I totally know that. As like my pants are halfway removed. And like, so that was like one of like many, many anecdotes that I submitted to Joe. And that was the one that he, at least from the writing and directing perspective, was like, we can make this something. This
yeah,
is
we
fun.
Can make this work.
Yeah.
I'm guessing
yeah,
that did so. Not, that relationship did not work out with that fellow.
Yeah, we're friends now, but you know, it's hard out here. That's why I think Diane really captures the like, she wants someone. She doesn't need someone. And I identify with her a lot in that I am like all in.
Yeah.
But I think the way it differs from other dating shows is that she's got her wits about her. Like she's all in, but then she's all out like at the same time. Like there's no romanticism there either. Like she knows her line and when it's crossed, she's out and that's it.
So. That sounds super exciting. Well, congratulations on the web series coming out.
Thank you.
And the big show on Friday. And every Friday at the Tiny Cupboard, people should go to...
it's free, too.
Go to the free show.
Well, tomorrow's donation-based. February 5th is donation-based. But every other
tomorrow,
week is
tomorrow, you should pay something, you cheapskates. But then the rest of the time, totally free.
And totally
you can get,
free.
You can get that information all on Instagram at the Tiny Cupboard or at Brittany Brave. And
yes.
I hope I get to see you soon, Brittany Brave.
I know, me too. I hope... I'm planning to come back and do a visit in New York. Yeah, like April-ish.
Okay, I'll see you in April-ish.
So hopefully we can, you know, touch.
You're not missing anything here, though. Enjoy Miami because we just had like 4 feet of snow and I haven't left the house in a week. So it's.
Yeah,
it's
4 feet of snow means 4 feet of cocaine down here. So.
Yeah, doesn't. You guys in Miami, you guys are
always
having fun.
Oh, you know how we are.
So now it's just like a puddle. Everything's just a puddle and everything's disgusting and dirty in New York and wet and gross. So you're missing nothing.
Greatest city in the world, baby.
Greatest city in the world. Yeah. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being on Talk with Brittany Brave.
Thank you, Marty. I love you.
I love you, too. All right. Thanks for tuning in and thanks for watching. This is Talkward. Tune in at talkward.com and subscribe on iTunes and Spotify and watch on Instagram TV. I'm Marty Dundix, weekly humorist, editor-in-chief, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching. Bye.
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 Listening to Talkword. Please subscribe, follow us, and visit weeklyhumorist.com.